So 6 a.m. we're cracking our first beers. So how about you go first?
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, we are back.
Jimmy, long time.
I know. It's been, what, five-ish weeks, I think? Maybe
something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So I missed you, and I missed doing this, and I don't know. We'll see. And hopefully everyone missed us. So tell me about your summer a little bit.
Yeah. So the past couple of weeks, we've been traveling. We did the whole trip. Well, not the whole trip. We did a trip to Mount Rushmore, but included a lot of national parks on the way. We did Bryce Canyon, since Bryce's name is Bryce. And then we did Old Faithful up in Yellowstone. And then on the way back, we did Arches. And man, love Arches. Amazing.
So you did the walk out to the Delicate Arch?
We did the walk out to the Delicate Arch. And then the Double Arch, we climbed up in the Double Arch.
Didn't break it, did you?
No, luckily.
Oh, well, yeah.
Another guy up there was like pushing rocks around. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, leave it nice for everybody else, right?
Yep. How about you?
Yeah, we did a 7,200-mile road trip as well. Well, maybe not. I don't know if you did 7,200 miles, but we certainly did.
No, ours was 3,600. We didn't go all the way to Boston.
Yeah, that's still good. But yeah, we started at Mount Rushmore, saw my parents in Chicago, sister-in-law in Boston, and then we went to Graceland, saw some Elvis action, and did some Route 66 stuff along the way, Petrified Forest.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, and the boys got sworn in for their first badge that they got there.
Yeah, no, that was great. We love the badges.
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
If you're a fourth grader, you should definitely go online and find out how to get a free admission pass to all the national parks. I think there's 29 or something like that, national parks. And they all cost about, what, $30, $40 to get into. But there's a program where if you have a fourth grader, the fourth grader will get the whole car in. And it's kind of cool because then Bryce was like, you know, the ranger was like, you're in charge when you go in there now.
So, yeah, a funny story on that note, too. So we come rolling up and I asked the guy, I said, do you have any veteran discounts? He said, oh, active duty only. I said, okay. And he said, unless you are disabled. Well, I have a 10% disability because I tore, the patellar tendon in my knee.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's service connected. So he said, oh, well, let me see your VA card. So I pull it out. I hand him the VA card. He's like, well, right now I'm going to write you a lifetime pass.
Oh, that's awesome.
For free admission to all the parks. All the parks and monuments. There's over 400 of them, I guess. So I was like, wait, you're giving me a free lifetime pass right now? He said, yep, sign here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, you know? And he's like, thank you for your service. You know, so then we've spent, whatever, eight or 9 hours at, what did I say? Oh, the Petrified Forest.
A lot of cool pictures there.
Oh, man, it is awesome. I mean, it's beautiful there, you know? And as many of the, or most, or all, whatever, of the national parks and monuments are. But yeah, had I known, we could have got a badge at Mount Rushmore. Do they even give badges at Mount Rushmore?
Mount Rushmore gives a badge as well.
Ah, we didn't get one.
Arches gives like a new wooden badge. So that was...
That's cool.
That was the favorite one.
Yeah, that's really cool. So yeah, and that was our summer pretty much. And then, you know, came back on the Sunday and both Clarissa and I went to work on that Monday. And, you know, the kids start back at school this coming Wednesday and life rolls along. And here we are.
I know. And we're back at the mics.
And we're going to be doing a couple of new segments in this upcoming year. One is going to be a beer review because we typically talk about beer and I brew. But we're not going to, well, maybe I'll do some of mine, but we're going to be doing some beer reviews and then maybe some industry movie coming soon news. Ted typically does that anyway, but maybe we'll formalize it a little bit and we'll do our typical trailers and, you know, I think it'll be for another good, if you want to call it season. I don't know. Do we call these seasons?
I think we can call it a season, but I do like continuing the numbering just up.
Oh, I got you. So instead of season 2, episode 1, we'd say it's like, what, episode 34?
Yeah, I like that.
And then one day we'll be like Leo Laporte and be like episode 692 or something, wherever. I don't even know where he's at, but... So how about we crack, you know, our beers here and give a...
Let's do that.
Quick taste, you know, and I think it should be said that our first recording is at 6 a.m. because, you know, we still have people visiting and just, you know, that's kind of the way life goes. We have to find a time and day to record.
That's right.
So 6 a.m. we're cracking our first beers. So how about you go first?
Okay, I'll go first. My beer is... an IPA 395. I thought, since we've been doing so much driving, you and I, separately, this is a double IPA brewed with juniper berries and sage from the Mammoth Brewing Company. I thought I'd keep it local, localish.
Yeah, localish.
And then just, it was a cool looking bottle. And I think that was that was another thing, you know, we're going to add this beer review, but I want to talk about, like, the label and the sell, the marketing of this bottle. You know, it's got a cool IPA with the root sign inside of it, and it's a gold medal 2013.
You're talking about like the root shield?
Yeah, the root shield. We'll put a picture in our web notes, but it's a gold medal 2013 California State Fair specialty beer category winner. There you go, Mammoth Lakes, California. It's a big one from Whole Foods. So here we go. Okay.
All right. Wonderful. So what is that? One of the two, is that a 22-ounce bottle you have there?
Yeah, that's a pint and six.
Okay.
Yeah, 22.
So what I have is from our trip. We made a bunch of stops around the country at various breweries. The cool thing is, in today's like beer age, or beer renaissance maybe, is that as we come rolling into any town, you know, like Rapid City, South Dakota, or, you know, Albuquerque, or wherever we wound up, you know, I'd ask Calursa, I'd say, hey, how about, you know, just get on Google Maps or whatever and just like type in like, you know, brew pub or something, and we can get dinner somewhere and some craft local beers. And when you do that, there's like, I mean, like hundreds pop up from all over the place,
right?
Or whatever, you know, 50 or whatever. And it's like, man, how do you choose? But anyway, so this one that we have, since it's, you know, 6 a.m. is a coffee porter, New Mexico Pinon coffee porter from Rio Bravo Brewing Company in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And it's a 16-ounce can. So I did have it while we were there and I enjoyed it. So I figured, why not get a few? And what we did was we collected a few bottles here and there, bottles and cans, I guess. Some of them are cans. As we went around the country, when we found some good beers, one of the places we stopped was Samuel Adams Brewery. So we went on a tour there when we were in Boston. And after the tour, if you would take a walk down the street to Doyle's Pub, I guess it's like the oldest Irish pub in Boston or something, or so they claim.
Mm-hmm.
They will give you a free Samuel Adams pint glass. It's the perfect pint glass, they call it. It's otherwise, it's like $8 in the gift shop, but they give free ones. So I'm going to have this 16 ounce in a, well, it's not quite a pint, but in my Samuel Adams perfect pint glass. So
awesome.
Hey, it's kind of a double. So here we go. And like I said, it's a can. And let's see how this pours here. Ooh, nice and dark. All right. Thick, rich, creamy. Oh, like kind of deeper brownish tan head. So I'll let that settle a little bit. And then, so how does yours taste? Well, mine's settling.
Yeah, so mine tastes on a little bit on the stout side for an IPA. You know, it's the juniper berries, I think, pull out a little more of that flavor. I like it. It's not as... bitey as I like my IPAs, I guess.
Yeah.
So impressed, but not one of my favorites.
So when you say bitey, you mean you like it more bitter?
I do.
Yeah. All right. Let me take.
And it has a beginning of a, it has the start of an IPA, but it has the finish of a stout.
The start of an IPA. Oh, I see. Like, so on the front, it's kind of that, you know, hoppy flavor, whatever you want to call it. And then mm-hmm. on the back end, it kind of finishes a little bit like chocolatey.
Yeah. It's like a full mouth finish, you know.
Right, I gotcha. All right, so here goes the Pinon Coffee Porter. Let's see. Yeah, I don't really taste a whole lot of coffee. I definitely taste a lot of chocolate. So it's definitely chocolatey.
I do like that Sam Adams glass, though.
Oh, yeah, you enjoy that? Yeah, and it's definitely creamy. I mean, like, it's really got a full mouthfeel. And hang on, I need to take one more here. Yeah, it's like it's really creamy, kind of full in the mouth. And the carbonation, even though it has a good thick head, it's not like, you know, like it's not like a Coca-Cola kind of, you know, where sometimes you could have beers that are just overcarbed. I think it's got the perfect amount of carbonation. And let me just say, too, it traveled well because I was concerned, you know, going through the desert, it was like 115 and the car kept getting hot. And then we put the air on and it kept getting, you know, whatever. But surprisingly, it traveled as well as it did for how well or how good the flavor is.
Yeah.
But, you know, and now that it's sitting on my palate a little bit, it's there's almost like a spice to it. And I'm not sure if it's because, like, you know, it's the morning and I'm just not used to drinking beers in the morning. Or maybe it is, like, kind of piney. No, it's definitely got a little bit of bitters to it. I am tasting some coffee tannins, too, I think.
Okay.
But overall, I'd say, yeah, for as dark as it is, it's definitely got kind of a lighter flavor, you know? You wouldn't expect it to be so light.
Awesome.
All right, Ted. So what is on the agenda for tonight?
So the agenda tonight, I had seen these trailers before, and I didn't mean to do a trailer spective, but since we're getting back, we're only going to do a couple of movies, and they just happened to both be Emma Stone movies.
Yeah, I saw that theme. And let me correct myself, too. I said, what's on the agenda for tonight? And it's actually, what's on the agenda this morning?
So, yeah, so we have first, we'll have The Favorite, which is a teaser trailer for a Fox Searchlight film about the England during the war with France.
Yeah, like early 18th century.
Yeah, Queen Anne and her favorite niece, I believe, and her close friend, Lady Sarah, played by Rachel Weisz. But just an amazing teaser trailer. So chocked full of stuff. I think the two movies I chose because the trailers were just chocked full and just had a rapidity to their pacing and stuff. I just thought they're both very energetic trailers. So that the Favorite is the first one, and it's a teaser trailer. And then her new Maniac, which is the new Netflix movie.
I think it's like a short series.
Oh yeah. It's a series because it's the creator of True Detective over at HBO.
Oh, okay.
Cary Fukunaga.
Oh yeah. I did see that in the beginning and I was going to say I've never heard of Cary Fukunaga.
Yeah. If you haven't seen True Detective.
Yeah. I saw both seasons. I think there's only two seasons with that, right?
The first season, he did the first season with Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey.
So with that said, and we're talking about it, let's jump into Maniac.
Okay.
What year do you think it takes place?
I think it's in the future.
I would agree.
Very, very near future. It feels like it has a Black Mirror kind of look and feel, and it feels like it's a non-anthology piece.
So you pulled the Black Mirror out of it. I was thinking it was similar to, there's scenes that remind me of Lost in Space when they're around the table. It almost looks like they're inside the Jupiter spacecraft. But I think more than that, it kind of reminded me of like Matrix type scenes.
I agree. I mean, I think it has everything. I feel like this is the Netflix algorithm pushing, you know, looping back into the machine and saying like, all right, we pick these things out. Here's what people like watching and let's try to, you know, make this thing. And here's, you know, popular, talented actors. Let's put them in it. You know what I mean? And it feels like they're honing down their ideas. People love Black Mirror. They like anthology, but then some people like Serial, you know? So let's do it. It feels like it's trying to straddle both those spaces, which is interesting to me, especially when you put such a talented director, creator, showrunner like Cary in there. And it's, you know, the stuff that he was doing in True Detective was just groundbreaking television craft for HBO in this HBO space. And this is the first year that Netflix beat HBO for number of Emmy nominations. And I think they love it. But as far as like, you know, what the cost of that was, I mean, they did it at a huge cost. They spent tons of money. It's undisclosed how much money they spent on how many, you know, series they produced. But it is, you know, it's showing up there. It's going there. I made a big joke about the way that, how does, you know, Netflix decide whether they're going to produce something, and do they think one person might watch? Yes, let's produce it. You know, I think they sent, you know, who knows? I think somebody was saying 130 million on the season of The Crown.
Wow.
So that's a lot of money.
That is.
But anyway, it's a high number. It's undisclosed. They have deep pockets. We'll see how deep they are.
So Netflix, what it seems like they do is they watch your watching habits. They see when you watch, maybe how many different types of screens, you know, whether you're on a phone or a computer, or, you know, whatever, smart TV. And then they're also looking at, you know, like how far you watch into it, how many episodes you binge, when you stop, when you pause, you know, do you ever come back to it? And they're probably watching all of these habits that you have, gaining all this information. And it's probably anonymous, I would say. They're probably not like identifying you, but
non-PII.
Yeah, they're looking at the patterns of people, and then they're saying, well, this is what everybody enjoys, so we're going to make one show that kind of rolls in all these
elements,
attributes, and all these components. Yeah. And that's how they kind of come to these things. Would you say that like HBO does that and you know, other networks and things, or is this more of like a Netflix type?
Well, I don't think there's, I kind of consider this like, there's a camera, there's almost like a camera pointing back at the viewer and at Netflix, because they handle the channel of delivery so tightly to the consumer.
So the TV looks both ways.
Yeah, it definitely does. But HBO, when HBO broadcasts it, I mean, I think that's the thing. Netflix is not a broadcast anything. You know, HBO, albeit a high quality volume business, it's a high quality business, not a volume business, but it broadcasts out to the typical channel. So it's not controlling end consumer habits. It has no idea what, you know, DirecTV and Comcast, how it has a control over the two feeds of HBO. And now, you know, it'll have a little bit with HBO Go and the HBO Now. So whichever one of those, I think HBO Now is the direct streaming service. So it's gathering data from HBO Now, but HBO,
which would be like the gathering data for Netflix.
Right.
Or I should say Netflix gathering the data is in a similar fashion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that is only a fraction of the exposure that HBO has. And then HBO Go, which is a similar looking product, is run by the MVPDs, which is the cable companies. And that's why you have to authenticate through your cable provider to go to that site. So when you're not paying a la carte for HBO and you're paying for it in your package for DirecTV and you authenticate with DirecTV, then DirecTV is getting that information back, but I'm sure HBO is controlling that as well. But I have no inside knowledge of HBO. It's just, it's a very common model now where you have to keep your contract and keep your, you know, relationship with the MVPDs current, because they are very lucrative for the HBOs of the world, everybody that pays into that cable system. And then you have to be ready to be nimble enough to jump away from it and have your a la carte product direct to the consumer ready to go.
Yeah, and all these shows and series and everything, I mean, they're definitely not cheap. So, I mean, it just shows you how much money Netflix has from how many subscribers and consumers that they have. So, but getting back to Maniac.
Yes.
It also, it's like a virtual reality world, but without the, or maybe virtual reality, what do they call it with the headsets people are, yeah, virtual reality, right? VR.
Yeah, virtual reality.
Yeah. So it's almost like that, but without the headsets. It's almost, you know, what is it, like medication? And they have it in like the brain.
It's, it looked like brain waves. It looked like more, it looked closer to the Total Recall machine than anything else. Did you get the tone?
And it's funny you said, I thought the same thing. And yeah. Then there's a scene in there where Emma Stone, it reminds me of Sharon Stone. You know, where she's in the red suit with the cigarette, you know?
Oh, no, it's awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, I love the idea of these two characters, extremely well-honed actors. You know, Emma Stone, they're both amazing. And they get put in these different scenarios throughout these episodes. It's just, it's, you know, it, the trailer's great. It has the typical front end, you know, it has a slow build. And then in the middle, right after, you know, Sally Fields is talking to Thoreau about, you know, have you made any of your, how many of your subjects are catatonic? And he's like, none. And then, you know, sort of, or whatever. And then it just, and then it turns on the high, you know, the high gear, and it just runs through this montage of all these scenarios, all these different lives that these two characters live in. And you, and you're left kind of not knowing how to piece it together. And then, you know, the testers, the doctors come back in and they explain how no matter how far apart they put these two, they always find each other in the matrix, so to speak. So I thought that's an interesting concept, a great way to lay it out in a trailer, very evocative. And then to showcase the fact that we're going to see these characters in new situations. I don't know, every week, every other week. I don't know how it plays out, but we're definitely going to see this hybrid anthology / serial, which is just exciting to me because I don't feel like the space has been bridged like this.
And then they're talking about like trying to fix their brain, you know, because they're like broken or something. And they're going through all these images and fantasies in their head. Mm-hmm. Is it to like cure depression, would you say, or something along the lines of, you know, like therapies, but through medication and brainwave stuff?
Yeah, I think it feels like that. It feels like that's how they sell it to you to start.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how it ends up. Well, I'm interested to find out. I'm also interested to see if when they drop all 10 episodes or whatever, how binge worthy it feels, you know. Well,
yeah,
it's always hard for me. To me binging is literally like two episodes a night kind of thing.
I know, it's like people say, you know, oh, I did the whole season, whatever, last night. I'm like, yeah, I binged too. I watched this episode and a half. Then I had to go to bed.
Well, I think, you know, I've tried when the kids and Anne go back east some summers, I've tried to binge some stuff. And I would get through like 4 or 5 episodes of Orange is the New Black first season.
Wow, that's a lot. That's like 5 hours though.
I know, but then you go to work and then you come back and you're like, okay, you're up on episode 6 and I stayed awake the whole time, but it's just such a flood of information.
Yeah, you can't digest it all. You don't know where you're at in the story.
I don't feel like you're getting quality consumption if you're binging. I mean, just the word itself, binging, has negative food connotations. You're not a foodie if you're binging, you know. you're
right. And then you have to purge, you know, and
yeah. The vomitorium? No, that wasn't.
The vomitorium. And then I also think this calls into like ethics and research.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, it's going to hit on, you know, like how ethical is it to do experiments on people, whether or not they consent. And part of research is, you know, understanding what you're getting yourself into. But if it's something like of this nature that's going to mess with your head and everything, and, you know, it's sold to you in such a way that it's going to fix you, or you believe it's going to fix you, I still don't think you have the full knowledge of what you're consenting to.
Right. And it's like, it's a psychosis, right? It's like a psychosis inducing testing.
Yeah, and all of our brains are so different that me and you go through the same medication, the same procedures and all these whatever, you know, like you said, the brain waves and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. There's no telling how I'm going to respond and how you're going to respond.
Right.
And we might both respond positively or similarly, but then other people, you know, they might be wired a little different. They might have a little, you know, a little more dopamine or a little less serotonin or whatever the brain chemicals that are being released during these procedures. And it might cause them to either flip out, become more psychotic, or maybe have a psychotic break, let's say. Or it might be that the dopamine is released like so much so that they become addicted to it and they can't leave the virtual world.
Well, I think that's the general consensus of any kind of social media / cyberspace, is that it is feeding us these, you know, responses, and it's enforcing itself and pulling its own loop into existence, and it feeds itself while it's forcing us to hit that button, you know?
Well, it's the way like Instagram is designed to like hold back notifications until you get like a certain number, and then it like dumps your notification. And you're like, wow, 17 people like this, you know, and you're like, that's amazing. Instead of one at a time. So it keeps you coming back to see what's happening, you know, and it's like that. It's like a slot machine. You know, you never know when it's going to hit. So what is that? A variable ratio reinforcement schedule, I want to say. But so, yeah, like you pull that lever and it's like, is it going to hit now? Or man, I never know when, but I'll just never keep pulling because it's
because it's gonna hit somebody, and I heard one hit over there, and I heard one hit over there. But I think it goes back to that. What I think the most important line in this whole trailer is the one that I noticed before, right around a minute, where Sally Field said, "How many of your patients have gone catatonic?" And he goes, "None." Roughly, and I think that the idea of saying roughly is the way to tell your trailer audience that, you know, this is, it's going to look a lot like science. It's going to look a lot of like future science, but we're not taking anything seriously in this space. You know, this is an exploration of character and an exploration of these two actors and their craft and this director and his craft. Just, you know, it's selling all the highlights, and then, you know, we get to see if they pull it off.
Yeah, and then final thing I wanted to ask you, what do you think the significance of that green like counter is in the background? Because they show it in both the close scene and the wide scene, and you hear it ticking when he's asking questions, and then it has that like noticeable and audible tick when it changes from like 0.1 to 0.9, and... You know, and they show it in both interviews with Jonah Hill and Emma Stone.
Which one is this? The green what?
There's a green. It's not a clock. It's like a counter that happens. It's right in the beginning when they're doing the initial interviews, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially when they're consenting to the research they're getting into.
It just has the nine, the number on it, like a number, right? I don't know.
Yeah. And there's like this audible
click.
And you see it in both like the close and wide shot. So it's significant in something. I don't know what, but, or maybe it's not, but, and they're just, they have it there for effect.
I don't know. Oh, you know what it's like? It's like that, the board, you know, the flip board in the train station or whatever. Right.
Well, there's the flipboard in the train station that like kind of does the matrixy thing that turns into the letter A, which brings me to another thing. Why wouldn't it be the letter N? I mean, like subtle advertising for Netflix, right?
They don't want it. They want a little less.
You know, when with the tweezers, when they put down the A pill, I guess it's or chewy thing, whatever it might be, like kid vitamin. Like, why not like putting down like a letter N, and then it's like, you know, at the Netflix end, I thought that would have been a little over the top, maybe.
Well, maybe they had this in mind before they sold it to Netflix to produce.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be on ABC or something.
NBC. Oh, no, ABC, you're right.
ABC, yeah, because of the A.
Okay. All right, so what do you think? I mean...
Well, and then I'll have to say that when they did that like montage of all those fast clips of their like what would you call it, like their flashbacks or something,
their states, it's like their virtual states. Yeah,
my favorite was the purple Muppet.
My favorite was when it has Jonah Hill like, with the mullet. He's got the mullet and the jersey, and she comes home to like a family.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know what's going on. And he's sitting at the breakfast table, like laughing at her and stuff. So, I mean, to me, that shows like the range that this is going to take these characters. It'll take them from a noir, you know, she's got the shawl on in the woods, like Miller's Crossing. And then the next scene, you know, he's sitting at a breakfast table with kids and she's come home from a night shift or something.
Yeah. And they keep finding each other, which is another significant part of it. And like they said, no matter how much we separate them or how far we separate them, they keep finding each other.
Yeah.
So I wonder what the significance there is, but it's probably like love or something. I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, it's kind of like in True Detective where the two main characters are tied together and then they they basically spend a whole season fighting to separate each other.
Right.
And this is like spending a season to come back together. This is a half hour series. I don't know. I mean, it's just the space. It feels like, does it make it more bingeable, less bingeable? Is it, do they cut out some of this stuff?
So you're saying 30 minutes might be too short?
Yeah. I mean, in the space for, I hate just comparing it to True Detective, but I loved it so much that first season. And then the second season was such less, you know, of a vision, like of a singular vision. It, you know, it really needed Carrie's direction and auteur spirit. So I fell out of that three episodes in.
Yeah, we finished it.
You finished it? Was it all right?
It was okay. Yeah, I mean, but I agree. I think the first season was much better.
I mean, the fight in the projects, just the craft in that alone. There's been a couple of articles about how, you know, they shot it in the real projects, and the master shot, the way they have the camera moving through the space, the cameraman actually like hands off through the window to other cameramen, and it's like this great master shot of a crazy fight scene. So even just the craft of them putting it together was so exciting when it rolled out that this is a no-brainer. I'm definitely gonna watch this one.
Yeah, overall, I think 30 minutes is good, because all too often shows move way too slow. Like Lost in Space had some episodes where after an hour of watching, the whole point was they met people from another crashed ship. And I'm thinking, wow, it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, they could have gotten there quicker and then filled it with other information and other parts of the story. And you feel like it just carries through with all these scenes that aren't really adding to the enrichment of the story. It's just, maybe it's just to show their struggles on the planet or something. But yeah, 30 minutes to me is more than adequate. I love when they're 30 minutes, because sometimes you don't have a lot of time because you want to get to bed so you can get up early for work and all this.
Yeah.
And I don't have to sit there like, you know, falling asleep 48 minutes into it, like what happened at the end, you know? And and so I'm happy to see that it's a 30 minute show.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I'm not saying I'm going to binge like hours on end of a 30 minute show, but we'll probably do one, two episodes maybe at the most. But yeah, for 30 minutes, heck, I'll get that back in life. Actually, I won't, but
we don't get anything back
when it comes to time. You're right. So with that said, Ted, are you going to watch?
I am definitely going to watch this. And for Carrie, I'm going to give him the whole season.
All right. Yeah. I mean, for 30 minutes, it's not that big of an investment. The whole season's what, 10 episodes, 5 hours. So yeah, why not? I mean, I think I'm in too. Well, I mean, the good thing is, again, you could go 30 minutes, you know, one episode, two episodes. If you don't like it, it's an hour of investment that you can just say, screw it, I'm done, I'll go on to something else. If you like it, again, 5 hours isn't too bad for, you know, a whole season.
Awesome. So before we get into the favorite, do you want to take a break?
Yeah, let's definitely take a break. I think after all this beer, we might need it. If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. All right, and we're back for The Favorite, released, November 23rd?
Yes.
And you said the other one was at the end of September, correct?
The other one's September 21st. That's going to drop all the episodes. And like you said, The Favorite, this teaser trailer came out early in July, but I still think it was so evocative and just fast moving. And I know it's a teaser trailer, so we don't know a lot of what's going on, but it does encapsulate the essence and the feel of what's happening here. So I thought it was really fun.
Would you say it's a comedy?
I definitely think it's in the comedy space. What do you think?
Well, there's like these disparate scenes of mayhem.
Yeah.
And it has that British slapstick feel in a lot of ways, you know, that dry humor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be comedic about Queen Anne, and she seems a little, like, off her nut, you know? I mean, like, I didn't realize, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe, you know what, this is the perfect movie for your wife, Anne, to cover Queen Anne, because she's like the history buff of this era of things, but we don't have her, so we'll have to make it up, and hopefully we pass her test later.
When we listen to it in the car, we'll see.
Yeah, and then she'll be cussing you out, saying, you screwed up, you forgot. Well, the one thing I do want to say, though, speaking of screwing up and everything, is that they misspelled favorite. You know, somehow they put a U in there. I don't know where that comes from, but, you know, oh, those Brits.
Brits.
You know, another Fox Searchlight. We tend to do a lot of those.
Yeah, I think Fox Searchlight, A24, and Netflix are like the go-to of our kind of the things that we're interested in.
Yeah, they're like smaller well, oh yeah, the things we go to. What about Marvel and all that you're into?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm into that. So, but I think we cover the gamut of stuff. I it's definitely a more interesting space is the smaller houses.
Well, I think they have more latitude for creativity.
Yeah. I will say so this is Fox Searchlight. There's been a lot of buzz. Wall Street Journal wrote an article about how Disney's purchase of 20th Century Fox is going to, you know, destroy the main label of Fox, but Fox Searchlight and all this other stuff. I just feel like there's a lot of clickbait out there on a lot of people speculating how the merger is going to affect things. And I think it's having unintended consequences. You have people like Ryan Murphy leaving. He's the, you know, the showrunner and producer of a lot of edgy stuff on FX. He did American Horror Story and other stuff like that. And he jumped ship, you know, even before they had announced the merger, you know, supposedly stating that the thought of the merger, you know, and him not being able to do his own stuff, pushed them away. I think everyone is overstating the Disney effect, but we will see. Anyway, that was a little aside because this is a Fox Searchlight, and they even Wall Street Journal said Fox Searchlight is not in jeopardy of losing any of its funding or any of its clout.
It's off the table for being affected.
Right, because it's such a juggernaut for the Academy. Ugh, the Academy. Did you hear? I don't know if you're, are you out of the Academy news? Did you hear?
I haven't heard.
So the Academy has made a new category. They're doing most popular movie.
Most popular movie. So is that based on box office revenues?
So they're keeping best.
I mean, how do you, that's the only way I would say it's most popular.
And even that is like, that seems like it's a factor of marketing. It's not necessarily. It's going to have best picture, and then alongside it, it's going to have most popular. So I don't understand how they're doing it. A lot of people are up in arms over it. So
I like the idea. You know, I mean, best picture, I think, would have a connotation of artistic, you know, it's artistic right. Prowess, right? Like how artistic and how good and how well designed and developed and directed and written. And, you know, it's just everything, you know, music score. Whereas most popular would be, you know, Marvel Universe or something or other, you know, Infinity War, whatever it is. But how do you judge that, though? Based on trailer views on YouTube, box office revenue? Well, I mean, that would be the most popular, I guess. But then what about if it comes out in January and you have box office, maybe isn't that great. But then when it comes to streaming, it explodes. I mean, how do you define most popular?
You know, it's the Academy grasping at things that it's completely lost touch with. You know, they're also limiting the broadcast to 3 hours. I guess it was tipping over 4 and it was kind of left open. So it's funny.
You just reminded me why I don't watch it.
There's so many problems with it that I think they're trying old world solutions to the problems that they're having in a new world. I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about how they could up it. You know, I remember Albert Chang talking about his streaming of the Oscars many years ago before he went to Amazon. So I think they need to bump that up. That's my take on how they can improve this. More cameras. There were cameras in the bar in the hallway in the lobby, so you could actually see the actors and actresses and all the other people in the bar drinking, and they didn't have mics out there. But I think you cover the bar like a sideline at a sporting event. You know, you have a mic and you have Andy Cohen and you have some red carpet,
like man on the street.
Yeah, you have some red carpet people, and you talk to the people that are coming up and what they think their chances are, and you talk about the people that just lost and how they feel about losing. You know, I think that's the drama that people want to see. You know, They started cutting to reaction shots of the losing contestants, losing nominees. And that's the thing that people are looking for. I think, you know, it is, people want to see actors and superstars humanized in this space. And that's one way to do it.
And I would almost say that they don't really even lose. I mean, they just don't get an Oscar, but they don't, you know, I mean, to be nominated doesn't mean you lost.
Right. I mean, the nominations are still touted by marketers in the future, you know, Academy Award nominated is the same shield. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, yeah, you lost. Yeah. You made $35 million from that movie as a loser. You know, I don't think so.
Yeah. The definition of loser is, you know, skewed quite a bit.
But okay, with that, we are so far away from, you know, the crazy Queen Anne. Let's get back to the favorite.
Okay.
Here.
But Fox Searchlight is definitely always in the talks of the Academy space. Tell me about your first thoughts of The Favorite.
First thoughts are, so, you know, I like to look up to see who directs it and everything. And Yorgos Lanthimos is a Greek director, but I've never heard of him. And I looked up a bunch of his movies and I've never heard of any of those either. So.
Oh, you haven't heard of The Lobster?
No, I never heard of The Lobster. I never heard of any of them.
Oh, The Lobster's a very strange movie. But definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, and you know, and anyway, getting to my first impressions of the trailer. So watching it, I mean, yeah, it looks funny. There's a bunch of witty one-liners, you know, and I don't know who the character that says to Emma Stone, "I shall have you stripped and whipped," and then she says like in a evocative voice, like, "I'm waiting." You know, like things like that I found pretty comical, and you know, and I like when people put twists on, like they bring out a different meaning in what was initially implied. But like I mentioned earlier, it's a bunch of these disparate scenes that I don't know how they tie together, other than to say that Queen Anne's court or castle, or I don't know,
court,
I guess court,
good.
But court. Yeah. Like her court is just insane. I mean, they're all crazy. And it's just the weirdest events are occurring when they're throwing ducks in the air. And, you know, you'd think they're skeets or something that like target practice, but instead they're throwing like live birds in the air or something that she's gunning down, you know, and then they're shooting the armor off of
suit of arms. Yeah.
Knight's armor, a suit of arms. Yeah. There you go. You know, they're doing all this stuff and it's just like, what on earth is going on here? And it's supposed to take place around 18th century or early 18th century England when they're at war with France, but it doesn't even like get into any of that. It's just how ridiculous the castle is.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's the, you know, the war with France and the macro level, but the micro level is this, you know, battle with the court and who will assume command when, you know, obviously Queen Anne is unraveling in front of our eyes, in front of everyone's eyes. So it is this palette that we're given, you know. And to me, the thing I love about this teaser trailer is the beginning. In the beginning, it shows like a court sitting down. And it really puts you in your place. You are firmly affixed with them, and to me that really drew me into this as a teaser. And then it just hits you over the head every few seconds. It's kind of unrelenting in its pace, and it's, you know, and in the way that it pounds through this minute. You know, it's a teaser trailer, so it's not meant to link these things together, but it gives you so much more richness of information than some teaser trailers. Some teaser trailers are just like evocative and they take one thing and they show you that one thing, but they just show you like the silhouette of it, or a tragedy, and they give you a story and they give you one aspect of it. But this is just goes all over the place. Like you said, they're shooting ducks. They're shooting suit of arms. They're scaring each other in the woods. They're eating cake. You know what I mean? It's like, it's this opulence. It's this lifestyle of the time that we have no access point to, you know, as people from 2018, you know, it's jarring. And then people like Anne.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's you're all over the place, so you don't know where you are, and it keeps you like in an uneasy feeling of
right.
what's going on.
I mean,
on.
I expect subsequent trailers to have more of the storyline of the rivalry between Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. But even there, when she shoots the suit of arms, it feels like they're in this crazy duel with one another. The way they juxtapose the shots, you know, the way the Eisenstein comes in, you know, it shows Emma Stone, it shows Rachel Weisz. Rachel Weisz shoots a gun, and you're like, oh, what happened there? And then they show the suit of arms, you know? So it's like, you don't know who's shooting who and what's going on. So I think that's a good early sell for a movie like this. You know, you sell the scenery. Everybody's chewing the scenery. It's amazing. Mise-en-scene. They spent some money on sets and wardrobe and just, it's all, you know, it is a well-appointed trailer.
Like Phantom Thread. How true do you think this is to the actual story?
Oh, I'm sure it's even crazier and more debauchery in real life than this.
Oh, okay. So you think it's
tame. It's tame in comparison to the real story.
So did it sell you? Are you going to see it or what do you think?
Oh, I mean, it sold Anne, so I think we'll go see it.
Well, I'm not surprised it sold Anne. That's why I said we needed her for this one. Yeah, we dropped the ball there. We should have had her up at 6 a.m. Yeah, you know, I mean, it might be a streaming one for me, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, an aloof might. Stellar cast, I'll say that for sure.
Right.
I don't think I'm going to see it. Like I said, though, if, you know, streaming, and I might say like, hey, you know, Ted and I covered this one. How about we watch it and see if it's any good or whatever? And, you know, it might be one of those kind of nights, but I'm definitely not going to go to the theater for it.
No. What? So you're not going to go to the theater. What did you think about the poster? Did you see the poster of it?
Are you talking about just it has the black and the black background with the white lettering and nothing else? Yeah, I mean, it seems, I don't know, it tells you nothing really. I mean, it's like The Favorite, like misspelled.
Well, I thought, I mean, so I definitely had a visceral reaction to the poster. I felt like the poster was, you know, a nice touch point for this content. I don't know. I was definitely drawn in by that poster, even though it's very, very low on information. It felt a lot like The Prestige, Greatest Showman, I guess Hugh Jackman movies.
Well, let's put it this way. If I saw it in a movie theater, like, you know, how they have posters on the walls as you're walking to like the theater where you have the movie you want to see.
Yes.
I would say, oh, well, this is an upcoming movie. I'm not sure. Maybe I'll just like go to YouTube and look at it. But if I saw this on the street, say in a bus shelter, you know, thing or, you know, anywhere else, I'd be like, mm-hmm. what the heck's The Favorite, you know? And I would have just driven by or ridden by or whatever and probably not paid much attention to it.
Right.
Because it wouldn't have caught my eye. Or if it did, I would have been like, huh, what's that? I don't care. And I'll just keep going.
It's a little too. So it's like you said, I think you brought up the exact point of the way
of out of home
of your audience. Yeah, your out of home audience. When you're walking up to the box office and that poster is in front of you, you have a little more time. You're on foot. You're walking around. You're waiting to see a movie. You're in the right space. You're in that frame of mind. You're kind of in a movie setting already. So it makes...
Well, and you can actually read the small lettering.
And you can kind of take the time to process the fact that there are three columns except for the favorite, you know, where it says, like, I made a joke of who is this actress Olivia Emma Rachel? Because if you read it, like, left to right, that's the way it looks like. But it's actually three columns, Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz.
Right.
But I think it will be interesting to see. I do not expect billboards and bus terminals to have this same striking kind of feel. You know, it might preserve some of this lettering for some of the copy on it, but it's got to sell the actresses in this. So I'll be interested to see bus terminals, bus enclosure posters that don't have a huge Emma Stone face and a huge Rachel Weisz face, because those are the two faces that are going to be needed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then I wanted to make a few mentions. Well, before I do, you're finished with what you were saying. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, totally. I was totally finished. I'm excited to see the Out of Home for the favorite. We are a must watch. And we probably end up seeing the stuff Redbox. We did go out to the theater to see Mission Impossible Fallout. It was amazing. We came home and we immediately found the old Mission Impossibles on it. So we streamed a couple of the old Mission Impossibles, and they were also very good.
So would you say it was better than just a popcorn junk movie?
I think so. I think it was probably the best action movie I've seen this year. And this year has been, what, Infinity War and Black Panther, I guess, were the superhero ones. And I guess this isn't a superhero, but he might as well be. Ethan Hunt is amazing. I was saying to Anne, you know, we went back to we saw the other Chris McQuarrie one. So Chris McQuarrie has written and directed the past two. And then Brad Bird did the one right prior to that. And that one, there's quite, I mean, people love the Brad Bird one, but I don't know. The Ghost Protocol was, you know, it paled in comparison to the Chris McQuarrie. So I was telling Anne, I hope that Chris McQuarrie got a trilogy deal, and I hope he gets to do another one, because I feel like he's really hitting his stride with Ethan Hunt here.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I definitely think I'm going to go see Mission Impossible. Well, maybe not. I mean,
you're streaming it.
I'm not going to see it in the theater, but I'll probably, when it comes to streaming or even Redbox or something, I think it's definitely one to get. And maybe Redbox more than streaming, because then you get the Blu-ray and you can get like the best sound. And I think the uncompressed picture, and, you know, just I think it'll just be a better experience, you know, as far as the subwoofer blowing up the house and everything. Absolutely. All right. Awesome. So a couple quick things to clean up on. Well, maybe not to clean up on, but to inform listeners of. So on our website, Ted and I have a new photograph. Clarissa and I got home from our trip and we bought a new bicycle because, you know, the shtick is that, you know, I ride my bicycle everywhere and everything. And so we got this called an Urban Arrow. Mm-hmm. And it's what's known in the Dutch world as bokfiets or box bike. So essentially, I ride in the back, kind of bolt upright with good posture, and the boys will ride in the front box or bucket. But instead, I have Ted there. So you can go check that out on our website.
That was fun.
And then I wanted to briefly mention, I saw just this morning when we were getting ready, I was Googling around and killing some time before we started. There's a trailer called Why We Cycle. And it's a website and all these things. And it pretty much just documents the intangible effects of bicycling in a positive way. And the Dutch bicycle culture, kind of what makes their society, like everyone's so happy in the Netherlands and stuff, you know. But so, you know, I'm looking forward to watching that when it comes out. That'll probably be a stream too, but I just wanted to make a quick nod to that, just because I like to ride my bike everywhere,
of course.
So Ted, to finish up, any final thoughts on the beer that you've been sipping on this fine morning?
So I definitely think it's amazing to call it an IPA. It definitely has a stout feel now that over the course of this hour or so, it has gotten a warmer, and both IPAs and stouts are both also meant to have enough complexity to hold up under, you know, room temperature drinking. So,
well, that's when the flavors come out, is when they get warm. When exactly. They're cold, it numbs everything, right. You know?
So it has,
Which is why you need to drink Coors Light freezing cold so you don't taste it.
The Arctic ice back in the day. Yes.
Yeah. Ice house.
Oh, that had the worst headaches. We used to get cheaper kegs brutal. Of Ice House, and it was just like, the headaches off the Ice House. Anyway, so the flavor profiles are definitely more stout than IPA, so I thought it was a bit of a misdirection to call it an IPA.
Wish I was drinking it with you, but hey, I got my own.
You have your own. You have your what is that? The coffee?
Yeah, it's a New Mexico Pinon coffee porter from Rio Bravo Brewing Company in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Overall, it's 45 IBUs at 6.7% alcohol. And over the course of this time, I still have a little bit left. It's gotten even smoother. Not because I've become more buzzed, but it was already smooth, but it's even like less fizzy. It's almost more like caramely, almost like an iced coffee with a hint of like chocolate in it or something. It's like,
oh wow,
yeah, it's really yummy. All right, cool. I think we had an awesome first week back, and looking forward to continuing on the rest of the year with, you know, refining our craft.
Of course. Oh.
You want to say good morning? Just yell good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Okay, boys. Okay. Good morning, boys.
The whole house is awake.
All right, Ted. Yeah, and I guess yours is probably about to come up, and I think that's a good time to end the show.
All right. And I have one last note. So I did start a contest online for our next this episode and the next episode. I put the three beers that I bought to record with. So IPA 395 is the first beer, and if you keep track of the beers we drink that I drink over the next two episodes, and then including we're on an episode this week of Be Kind and Rewind podcast. So I'm going to be drinking a beer during that, and if you keep track of these three and send it in to DM me on Twitter, then we'll pick from the winners, pick from the people that correctly chose the beers, correctly tracked the beers for this episode and next episode, and the episode this week of Be Kind and Rewind podcast, which you can find wherever you find our podcast.
Awesome. And so they're keeping track. What's the giveaway? You said there's a contest.
Oh, so the giveaway. So the contest is the
that's
key
the key point.
It's
I think.
It's on Twitter. So I put a tweet out, and I'll continue to push that tweet out this week and next week. The giveaway is for a Star Wars Battlefront 2 PlayStation 4 game. And then there's some runner-ups for posters and stuff like that. So that'll be this month's giveaway. Have a great one.
All right, man. Yeah, you too. I had a good time, and it's glad to be back, and glad you had a fun summer. And thank you to everybody for hanging with us.
Welcome back.
You know, I hope you enjoy what's to come.
Have a good
one. Catch you later, Ted.
See you. Bye.
You too.
Bye. Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.